open session. The Honorable Lawrence B. Hagel presiding. All who have business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please proceed.
Good morning, everyone. This morning, we're here to consider the case of McCarroll versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. The docket number is 14-2345. Who'll speak for Mr. McCarroll?
Good morning, Chief Judge. I am Matthew Lockwood from the law firm Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick. Appearing on behalf of Mr. McCarroll, with me at counsel's table is Zachary Stoltz, also at the law firm.
Thank you. For the Secretary?
Nicholas Esterman, along with Thomas Sullivan, Deputy Chief of Counsel, for the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. Lockwell, I see that you saved 10 minutes, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The question of whether Mr. McCarroll's blood pressure readings would be compensable but for the ameliorative effects of his medication is a medical question. The Board erred in this case when it answered that medical question with its own medical opinion.
The Board decided... Would you go back and just say that last the sentence before, please?
Yes, Your Honor. The Board erred in this case when it relied on its own medical opinion...
No, the one before that.
Okay. The question of whether Mr. McCarroll's blood pressure readings would be compensable but for the ameliorative effects of his medications is a medical question. The Board erred in this case when it relied on its own medical opinion to answer that question. The Board simply cited to blood pressure readings showing his history of blood pressure readings before medication was prescribed in support of its assertion that Mr. McCarroll's blood pressure readings would still be below 100 diastolic or 160 systolic, even without the effects of those medications. If Mr. McCarroll...
So are your arguments... So there are three alternatives, this is my view.
Yes.
Three alternatives for a 10% under this diagnostic code. There's the one that says blood pressure predominantly 100 or more,
mm-hmm.
Diastolic.
Yes.
And then blood pressure predominantly 160 or more systolic.
Yes, sir.
And then there's the one that talks about the history of predominantly 100 or more, and then need continuous medication for control.
Yes.
So which one of those three, or is it like two of them, or which ones are you talking about?
Okay. So we're raising three different alternative arguments in this appeal. The first argument we raised was where we cited to Jones, and we talked about how the Board cannot consider or reduce the veteran's rating based on the ameliorative effects of his medication. That actually relies on the 100 diastolic option and the 160 systolic option under the rating criteria. The second argument was about 4.7 and 4.21. The Board failed to consider whether or not the veteran more nearly approximated the predominant history requirement in that third option.
So what you're saying in answer, what I understood Judge Bartley's question is that you're foregoing the first two alternatives with regard to the actual rating schedule itself, just looking at the rating schedule numbers, and you're relying on the third option and as far as those numbers. And the other two are 4.7 and 4.21, right, which are different. You know, I mean, different theories. I'm not...
Well, as a matter of fact, we are actually relying on all three of the options provided by the 10% rating. Because if Mr. McCarroll's blood pressure readings are reduced only by the ameliorative effects of his medications, and but for those medications, his diastolic readings would be above 100, or his systolic readings would be above 160, then we, our argument is that Jones precludes the board's reduction of his rating based on those ameliorative effects.
But isn't there some kind of conflict? So let's clarify. These three alternatives, we'll call them 1, 2, 3. And 1 is the diastolic only, 2 is the systolic only, and 3 is the history plus the continuous meds. Okay, so isn't there some kind of conflict with your interpretation as far as 1 and 3 go? Because if we take you at your word that if he weren't taking meds, he would have met 1. Doesn't that conflict, wouldn't that conflict with giving him a 10% there whenever the third alternative, he would basically fall into the third alternative. The third alternative says, hey, I forgot my train of thought. Okay, the third one is the, yeah, sorry about that. The third one is the
history.
The history and the continuous meds. And if he, the continuous meds, it seems like if it would control his diastolic such that without the meds, he might need 100, but with the meds he wouldn't. Wouldn't he just fall into 3? Because that's the one that talks about you're under control, you know, of based on your meds.
Well, two responses to that, Your Honor. First, to the extent the use of continuous meds puts him in the third category, then the board should have considered whether he more nearly approximates the predominant history requirements, given that, you know, assuming that he can answer affirmatively the medical question, that his diastolic readings would be above 100 but for medication.
But you, in order to do that, you're bringing in another section of the regulations, right? Either, I can't remember which one, 4.7 or 4.21.
Right? Right.
So you have to use that in combination with your theory in order to get where you want to go. So it's not just theory number one.
Well, that is an alternative argument. I would argue that theory number one, the Jones argument, could stand on its own, and it could actually refer to every level of the rated criteria.
I'm sorry. I interrupted this train of thought of Judge Bartley, so would you please go ahead and respond to her?
Yes, Your Honor. So the second response to that is that the three options under the 10% rating criteria under 7101 are three wholly separate options. The continuous medications requirement only pertains to the continuous medications plus predominant history option of the rating criteria. The use of medications is not included in any other place in Diagnostic Code 7101. And the Secretary knows how to do this. When they want a factor to be shown at every level of the Diagnostic Code, the Secretary has been able to include that in the rating criteria. One example would be for diabetes. The requirement of using insulin for control is actually mentioned at every single level. So here, there's nothing in the Diagnostic Code that says continuous medications plus blood pressure readings over 100 for a 10%, continuous medications plus blood pressure readings over 110 for the next higher rating. So if our argument is that if the Secretary intended for those to be included in the board's consideration, that would be listed throughout the rating criteria.
What diagnostic code is diabetes?
7913, which is 38 CFR section 4.119, diagnostic code 7913.
Okay, thank you.
So, as I mentioned, at the 20% level, it talks about requiring insulin and restricted diet. At the 40%, requiring insulin, restricted diet, and regulation of activities, and it goes all the way up.
Is the first compensable rating 20%?
There's a 10% rating for manageable by restricted diet only.
Okay. And then how do you get to the 20%?
For where a veteran requires insulin and restricted diet.
Okay. So what is the requirement for administering insulin? It just says that insulin's required, right? That means some body made a medical judgment that insulin was required, and then once that happens, then you go forward.
Right.
So in this case, why isn't the fact that you reach this high, we're looking, talking about number three now, why isn't a triggering fact that you have this history of blood pressure readings with diastolic pressure greater than 100? That's the, that has to be established before you get, you know, before you, that's probably, well, I'm not saying probably, but it seems to me that's a requirement. So it would be just like insulin required, it would say, you would say history of. And then, and that is, that then is some sort of trigger, or has been a trigger, to give medication. And whether or not it's compensable or not depends on this history leading up to actually giving the medication. Probably not being as clear as I would like to be about that, but
I think I understand the question, Your Honor. What I would argue is the difference in the case of 7101 is that continuous medication is not mentioned at every level of the diagnostic code the way it is under 7913.
Well, except it isn't listed in the 10% rating.
Right, because in the diagnostic code for diabetes, you need that medication required for control to get to the 20%, mm-hmm. and then it's listed throughout the diagnostic code.
Here you need medication plus history in the third option, right? So why is that different? And the VA decided that, and we can't say that that that's not the right test, right? That's beyond our jurisdiction.
The medication plus history is only one option to get a potential 10% rating under 7101.
Mm-hmm.
And the diagnostic code shows that that is where you consider medication. There's nothing anywhere else in the medication that says continuous medication plus these blood pressure readings that are listed.
But if we were doing a mathematical equation, 1 plus 2 equals 3, 2 doesn't equal 3. In other words, you have two things you have to have. You have to have the history, plus the medication, plus a conclusion. And when that conclusion occurs in that process, I don't know. But in other words, you have two elements, do you not? And one of them's missing.
So
the history is missing.
Okay, so we're now talking about the third.
I'm sorry. We're in three.
I'm still trying to
hear your arguments about why there is a history or should we should think that there's a history in some respect.
Okay. So the argument is that the veteran, if he can show that but for his use of medications, his diastolic readings would be over 100, he would more nearly approximate the predominant history requirement for that third option in the diagnostic code.
And you just said, as I hear you saying right now, if the veteran could show.
If he could show that.
And, of course, he didn't show here, right? No evidence of that here.
Well, I would disagree.
As a matter of fact, I think your brief says that the veteran shouldn't have to show.
What happened here in this case, Your Honor, is that the board jumped to its own medical conclusion about what the blood pressure readings would be without control of medications.
What did the veteran show?
The veteran raised a medical question. So he came forward at his hearing. He discussed how when he was off his meds for a certain amount of time, his blood pressures were up during that time. He's brought forward evidence showing his current blood pressure readings, which often approach and sometimes even exceed
These were self-administered blood pressure tests, it appears, because the record of clinical testing only shows one episode where the diastolic was 100.
Well,
so these were self-administered? Is that
there's this note from the Walmart pharmacy, which is at page 582 of the record, and it's actually looks to me like it's signed by a pharmacist, so I don't think it's entirely clear that those tests were self-administered. So in that note, he has one systolic reading of 166, which we would argue should be considered under the more nearly approximated, the predominant history criteria. And then he also had diastolic readings approaching 100. And then there's also the fact...
Wait a minute, let's go back. You have 166, right? And you think that that approximates what?
The predominant history.
Okay, you can stop right there. Predominant history. How is one reading predominant?
What we're arguing is that Mr. McCarroll has raised a medical question. So he has that one reading, which is part of the context of the entire evidence. He has the diastolic readings approaching 100. He has increased his dosage
of... You still haven't answered my question, and that is, how is one reading predominant?
One reading in the entire record by itself would not be predominant.
Okay, so you don't have... It isn't predominant on theory number two, I think it is, right? Or number one. In other words, it's not doesn't meet the predominant like 160, right? It doesn't meet that requirement because there's only one.
If we are considering his post-medication blood pressure readings only, which we've argued under Jones we should be considering his pre-medication blood pressure readings. But if we are considering his post-medication readings, then we would have to concede that one reading would not be predominant. But what we're arguing is that we should be going by his pre-medication blood pressure readings.
Well, where are they? Where are they in the record?
We don't have those.
Why not? Why did he come in and say, I went to Kmart, or I went to a doctor, or I went to the VA, and they prescribed this medicine apparently a day before this blood pressure medicine, the way I read your brief anyway, a day before these readings were taken? Why didn't he just describe what did he do to establish that he needed treatment for blood pressure?
Well, we do have, I may have misspoke, we do have treatment records from before he was prescribed with medications, but what we don't have is any medical evidence establishing what his blood pressure readings would be if he were not taking medications.
Well, why not?
Because the board jumped to its own medical conclusion to answer that question.
Right. Isn't that your strongest argument, that once you raise this rational medical argument, he has a history. He was found service-connected for high blood pressure, wasn't he?
Yes.
In the service.
Yes, he was, Your Honor.
So doesn't the burden shift to the secretary at that point as a matter of law? Why should we be struggling with this as a court? I mean, that's my hypothetical question, I would expect an actual answer.
I would agree with Your Honor 100%. I think that, you know, as we've argued...
Why don't you argue that?
Well, we did raise it in the brief, you know...
But you're here.
Okay.
Under intense scrutiny.
Right, so...
Friendly intense scrutiny.
Certainly. He has come forward, he's presented the board with this medical question of what are my blood pressure readings if I was not taking medication? Argument is that under 4.21, 4.7 VA's regulations, if those blood pressure readings would be 100 or more, absent medication, he would more nearly approximate that predominant history.
Well, does the VA at that point, once he raises that issue, the VA, and certainly, let's say for these analytical purposes, the board in judging what went on below, doesn't the VA have an obligation to come forward with its doctor and say, look, he just doesn't meet the standard, period. We've recommended he go off the medicine for 2 or 3 days, 2 or 3 weeks, whatever it is, and nothing bad's going to happen to him. Whether that's true or not, at least it's something from the VA. Well, they didn't do any of that.
Absolutely.
So why doesn't the argument stop there? Once we've made this argument that this is a medical question, the VA has to do something other than conclude that there is no medical question for us to deal with.
Yes, Your Honor, and I would certainly argue that in and of itself is remandable error in this case, because the board didn't say anything about 4.7 doesn't apply to this case. The board didn't say anything about, you know, this information is irrelevant. What the board actually did in this case was come forward with its own finding of fact without any medical support, saying we find that assertion regarding the unmedicated blood pressure readings to be inaccurate. So that's a medical finding of fact by the board, and that alone is remandable.
Is that arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable?
Yes, Your Honor. It's clearly erroneous because it's not supported by...
Well, I didn't say clearly erroneous. I said, is it arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable?
Yes, sir.
Don't get hung up on other standards.
Yes, Your Honor.
Happily get yourself hung up on other standards.
Yes,
sir. Are you with me?
It is arbitrary and capricious.
All right. And don't, by the way, you feel you have to agree with me just because I asked the question that way.
Well, we do certainly.
You don't care which way we come out as long as we come out in your favor. Is that correct?
Well.
Or do you?
The Jones argument we have raised applies to every level of the diagnostic code. And that's why we think that that would be the best way for the court to rule in this case, is because if the veteran's blood pressure readings is to be measured without the ameliorative effects of the medications, then if his diastolic readings would be a 110 or above, he could get the next higher rating, and so on and so forth. So the Jones argument does apply to every level, and we think that that's how the court should rule. But, you know, certainly the board's failure to obtain a medical opinion by itself is remandable error in this case.
So your argument about Jones, which referenced, I think, the condition there was fibromyalgia, but it referenced the IBS diagnostic code. Is that the way?
I know that in Jones, the diagnostic code at issue was the IBS diagnostic code.
It was the IBS, yes. But it referenced as a point of comparison, I believe,
right.
the fibromyalgia
right. yes,
code.
Right.
And so the fibromyalgia code has, I forget the exact evaluation breakout. Let's say it's 10, 20, 40 or something like that. And medication was mentioned in the 10 and the 40. Are you saying that under your view, because it wasn't mentioned in the 20, that like that there would be this, I don't know, you could consider it odd way of looking at that diagnostic code, the fibromyalgia one, where for 20 you're not considering meds, but for the 10 and the 40 you are. So you're kind of like breaking it down just based on whatever the different, not whatever is in the that diagnostic code as a whole, but is in each level of percentage.
Yes, Your Honor, because unless it's something like the diagnostic code for diabetes where each level is the criteria for below plus additional criteria, in other diagnostic codes, each level should be considered separate and apart, and unless that level explicitly mentions how to consider the ameliorative effects of medications, that should not be part of the board's analysis. So, does that answer?
And your view is that's consistent with Jones, but that's what Jones meant, even though it seemed to be referencing the fibromyalgia diagnostic code as a whole.
Our view is that what Jones meant is that unless the diagnostic code tells you to consider medications, you should not be considering the ameliorative effects of medications. So if there are no further questions from the panel.
Let me, I'm trying to understand that last statement. explain that to me with regard to Jones.
Okay. I'll
let you do that on
rebuttal.
Yes, sir. I do have another question. Now, I'm trying to understand your extra scheduler argument. let's see. I have a quote here from page 19 of your reply brief. Or maybe, 19, page 19 of your brief.
Okay.
You say, the board should have but did not consider whether 3.321, the extra scheduler reg, provides Mr. McCarroll with a route through which he can obtain a 10% rating due to the fact that his current disability picture is no different from that of any other veteran whose blood pressures have been brought under control by medications, but otherwise would be compensable. I mean, it just sounds like usually the basis of a 3.321 is something, unique or exceptional or whatever language is used. And here you're just saying his picture's no different from any other veteran? I don't get it. under what you're trying to say.
So what we've argued in citing 4.7, 4.21 is that the predominant history requirement of that third option under 7101 is simply a way of showing, you know, a form of evidence to show that but for the use of medications, the blood pressure readings would be 100 or above. Under the Secretary's interpretation of the regulation, the only way to show that is through that predominant history. And if the Secretary is correct in his interpretation, then the diagnostic code does not contemplate any other way of making that showing of what his blood pressure readings would be but for the use of medication. So either...
And so that puts it into the extra schedule realm.
Right. If the Secretary's interpretation is correct, the diagnostic code does not contemplate this way of establishing a compensable rating. Are there any further questions from the panel? Thank you. Thanks.
Good morning, Chief Judge Hagel, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Nicholas Esterman, along with Thomas Sullivan, Deputy Chief Counsel. We represent the Secretary in this matter. The Court should affirm the Board's decision because its finding that the appellant was not entitled to a compensable rating was not clearly erroneous and had a plausible basis in the record. It's important to note at the outset that Diagnostic Code 7101 compensates a veteran whose blood pressure levels are indicative of certain cardiovascular strain or increased future health risks. And that is the average industrial impairment that's compensated under Diagnostic Code 7101. In particular, the third alternative for a 10% evaluation under the Diagnostic Code contemplates a scenario where a veteran has experienced these health consequences, but the blood pressure levels have been since controlled by medication. Now, in this case, in contrast, the appellant has never demonstrated a history of compensable levels, anything over predominantly over 160 systolic, over 100 diastolic. The only fact that's been established is that he takes continuous medication. We can presume so prophylactically based on the evidence in the record. If we look at the entirety of the third alternative under the Diagnostic Code, there's a number of factors at play here. The history of predominantly high blood pressure, specifically over 100 diastolic, and a second factor, the need for continuous medication. As I stated, the continuous medication factor is established here because the veteran did receive a prescription for medication in April 2009.
And who prescribed that?
Your Honor, that prescription was the product of a referral from a medical or from a doctor in service to a private physician, and the private physician prescribed that antihypertensive medication.
In service, meaning the secretary's doctor? What do you mean by in service?
Your Honor, the...
The veteran was in the military.
Yes, Your Honor. The initial diagnostic workup took place in March 2009.
Right, he was still in the military.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
And then the prescription of this medication took place by, it was an outside referral, which prescribed the medication in April 2009.
Does it make a difference whether it was an outside person or a military person?
No, Your Honor.
Isn't that pretty close to when he applies for compensation? I mean, within months of his discharge, I presume.
Your Honor, I believe...
Early 2009, and then he comes to the VA in late 2009.
Well, Your Honor, I believe his...
Do I have the dates approximately right? It's within months of his leaving the service.
Yes, Your Honor. He initially has the diagnostic workup in March 2009. His application for benefits is submitted in March 2009. He's afforded a VA examination in April 2009. And he ends up exiting service sometime around August 2009.
Do you think that makes a difference?
No.
Should the VA consider this prescription by a military doctor so close to the time of his... So there's no... Is that only related to service connection, not to whether it's compensable?
Yes, Your Honor. The veteran was assigned as a non-compensable rating here, presumably because he met the threshold for a hypertension diagnosis underneath the diagnostic code.
Well, let me ask you this. At the hearing, suppose the veteran had said, look, I've had a lot of trouble with my blood pressure while I was in service. Many days I went to Walmart or I went to the infirmary and I had the appropriate measurements. Does the burden then shift to the government to disprove that by competent medical evidence? Why shouldn't you just take his word for it?
Your Honor, if I understand your question correctly, if the veteran had submitted evidence of or...
He did. He testified, presumably, in front of the member of the Board of Veterans' Appeals.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the record does not reflect any blood pressure readings that would rise to the level of a compensable evaluation prior to a diagnosis or prior to a prescription for medication.
Well, how do you know that? How did the board know that? What did it do to determine that?
So the board looked at the relevant history in this case, which is the diagnostic workup that led to the diagnosis of hypertension. That took place in March 2009, and there was 8 blood pressure readings taken during that time, only one of which was exactly 100 diastolic, potentially compensable, but clearly they did not rise to the predominant level that's contemplated by the doctor.
All right, let me just show you my complete and utter fairness in terms of my questioning. Should the burden then shift to the veteran to come forward with some proper medical evidence that but for taking the medication, he would have the appropriate readings in order to be entitled to a 10% rating?
Yes, Your Honor, because the burden is on the appellant to establish entitlement in these cases, and that has not been established.
And what about the duty to assist issue raised by the appellant here? Doesn't the board member, I think under your own regulations, have a duty to inform themselves before the hearing of the whole background of the case and be ready to interrogate and also assist the veteran, even at the board hearing level? Why didn't the board member say, look, you know, here's the regulation, come back and see me with a real doctor's analysis of your condition without medication? And then if he came back and the doctor said, he's just too dangerous to go without this medicine, or here it is without the medicine, wouldn't the board be in a better position to make its determination to allow this court to exercise its judicial review?
Respectfully, Your Honor, with respect to your comment about the hearing officer duties that we have played here, the appellant hasn't raised that in their brief. It hasn't been an issue in this case. And there was an established medical history, which is contemplated by the diagnostic code, already in existence at the time of that hearing.
Well, did Mr. McCarroll explicitly state that he had self-administered blood pressure readings that amounted to the 100 diastolic requirement?
It's unclear based on his testimonies whether those were self-administered or not. I believe it was a general statement that he had on one or two occasions experienced diastolic levels of 100 or more in service. And
I think he said two or three.
Two or three, I apologize, Your Honor. That was a simple paraphrase. But if we look back at an extensive medical history in the STRs in this diagnostic workup that took place in March 2009, it's clear that there was only one instance of 100 diastolic predominantly in the record. And with respect to that diagnostic workup that took place in March 2009 that led to the diagnosis and ultimately to the prescription for medication, if you look at the 8 individual readings, really there's a large disparity between what was provided and what would be compensable in the diagnostic code. The first reading was 144 over 92, the second one 144 over 88, 128 over 88, 138 over 80, then you have this 156 over 100, which is presumably the only one that would rise to a compensable level, but not predominantly. 148 over 96, 120 over 92, and again, 126 over 90. So it's clear that his blood pressure readings were not a predominant level that would satisfy that history of, under that third alternative for a 10% evaluation, nor would they satisfy the first alternative either, which is predominantly over 100 diastolic.
Well, what about the appellant's seemingly main argument that looking at the criteria, the alternative criteria, 1, 2, 3, under 1, if he were off his meds, that that is meant to be applied as, hey, let's get you off your meds, or if we can't get you off your meds, let's get an opinion as to whether you would meet that requirement. What's wrong with that? I mean, in some respects, I find this code, like many of them, difficult in that if a veteran had been advised or had the foresight to not to go off medication, just not take it, you know, for a few days prior to an exam, he might have, I mean, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, might have met, definitely his readings would have been higher. That's the most I could say, being a layperson. I think because the medication was given to control his readings and the blood pressure, that the readings definitely would have been higher if he were off them. And so it's troubling that someone who had the, you could call it foresight, to get off their meds before they went to exams would be much better positioned here, presumably, than Mr. McCarroll, who didn't have the foresight or wasn't advised. And that's basically his argument. Like, hey, why didn't someone tell me, just go off your meds before you go to the exam, and I'd be, you know, I'd be in. Don't you find that troubling?
Well, Your Honor, a couple of responses. First, it would be unadvisable to suggest that a veteran should go off this medication, given the Secretary's reasonable interpretation of the regulation here is that what is being compensated are these health consequences that result or are currently in play due to high blood pressure. And so the upon suggestion that he would need to go off his blood pressure medication in order to establish entitlement to compensable evaluation is operating a false premise in that he has not established that he was being entitled in the first place. Again, the history of his blood pressure readings don't indicate blood pressure that is predominantly over 100 diastolic, which would fall within that third alternative. And
But you're going back to the third requirement, and I'm talking about the first requirement, which doesn't talk about history at all. It doesn't use the word history. It says diastolic readings predominantly 100. So it's almost like, I don't know that if it ignores history, but it doesn't seem to contemplate being too backward looking.
Well, Your Honor, our position would be that if you don't fall into the third alternative, you fall into the first or second alternative. So if your blood pressure is not controlled by medication, then control within the context of the diagnostic code, I think reasonably read as anything over 160 systolic or over 100 diastolic, that controlled would be anything below those levels. You would not, that control is not at play here. He clearly has blood pressure that is below these compensable levels. I apologize. I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Well, no, I was just pointing out how it's troubling that there's such disparity, I'm sure, in evaluations among veterans who are very similarly situated, and that disparity, this is just a general comment, is probably because some veterans go off their meds before the exams and some don't, or, you know.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, again, given the health concerns related to the cardiovascular system, it would be advisable to go off your meds to attempt to establish a compensable rating.
Right.
But also...
My point is, and I don't mean to interrupt, is that maybe a solution is, you're right, hopefully no one is going off their meds, but I know that they do. but maybe the solution to... make sure these people are treated equally is for the doctor to opine what the readings would be if the veteran were to go off the meds or didn't have access to meds or something like that, which I think it plays off of what Judge Greenberg was saying.
Well, Your Honor, again, the diagnostic codes, the rating schedules are based on medical principles, are meant for general applicability across millions, presumably millions of veterans. And so just because we can foresee a circumstance that a veteran may not establish service connection on a certain set of facts doesn't necessarily mean that our interpretation of the diagnostic code needs to be reinterpreted in this case.
What in your view would trigger a duty to assist in a case like this?
If I understand Your Honor's question, are you referencing the need for a medical examination in this case?
Well, I don't know. I just want to know what would trigger it. In other words, let's just say, assume that there was a duty to assist floating around, which there is in the statute, right? What I hear you saying is, hey, it's not here because we don't have a history, right? I mean, there's no duty to assist because they don't meet way to show to get a compensable rating involves really three steps, is what you're saying, right? And so because he doesn't have, or maybe two steps, because he doesn't have step one, the history, well, there's no duty to assist here. Am I right about that, your position?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And argument that the appellant might make is that, there's no way you can establish this history once an individual's been given this medication by apparently a competent person that thought that the veteran needed it. And so the question then is, it seems to me, once this issue is raised, in other words, once somebody seeks compensation and the only element that's left is whether or not the medication itself is the reason that this person does not have the history, is there an obligation on the VA to do something to try to help the veteran along? In other words, assist the veteran.
Respectfully, no, Your Honor. As I stated at the outset, there's a difference between the veteran in this case's, the appellant in this case's situation, and the situation that's contemplated by that third alternative. And that is that there is no history here.
Obviously,
that history is cut off to an extent once the medication controls it to non-compensable levels. And as I stated at the outset, there's no indication, the diagnostic code contemplates these health consequences, this increasing cardiac load, this stress on the arteries that comes with high blood pressure. And the Secretary has determined that this 160, 100 levels are the threshold, the minimum threshold for compensation of the diagnostic.
Okay, are you then, if I'm understanding you this theory correctly, and maybe getting into medicine now, but I'm just going to ask what I understood your line of response was, and that is the fact that somebody gets a compensable rating because of the history, because that's one element, is due to damage that's already done to the individual's arteries because of the history of pressure that's been placed against them, then there's some sort of permanent damage?
Presumably, yes, Your Honor. Obviously, we need to view this diagnostic code within the context.
Well, let's take that apart. I'm still wondering, is there any, I mean, it seems to me if we follow the Secretary's theory here, that an individual who didn't meet this history requirement before they began to take medication would be permanently eliminated from getting any compensation for hypertension. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. When would they qualify?
If for some reason the blood pressure medication no longer controlled their blood pressure and those levels reached the predominant factors listed in other areas of the diagnostic code, whether that's over 100, right, whether that's over 160, presumably it's no longer controlled, would no longer fall within that third alternative.
So it would be, what you would say is it has to be an actual fact. Is that right? In other words, you would actually have to establish a history. So in other words, let's say you're giving a person 10 milligrams, like in this case, and you increase it to 20 milligrams and then to 30 milligrams. But he still stays below this level. He hasn't established a history. He would have to go above the compensable level for some period of time to have a history before that the individual would ever get compensation.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure if he or she would fall back into the history element, because they would have currently a predominantly blood pressure over 100, over 160.
Well, wait a minute. What does predominant mean? Doesn't it basically mean the same thing as history? I mean, you can't have predominant on one reading, can you? Maybe it's less than history. I don't really know, but we're not talking about that. Do you see what I'm getting at? I think this is really what, as I understood Judge Bartley's question, is that there's something wacky about this. And I'm not sure if it's something that the court can do anything about, or that the Secretary should do anything about from the standpoint of something here. But that's what I'm trying to, get in my mind. You know, Judge Greenberg's question, I think, is a good one. That is, look, the veteran doesn't have the expertise to do this. How is the veteran supposed to deal with this when we're talking about something that's, potentially a very serious condition? I mean, is there any duty to assist here, and when would it be triggered?
Your Honor, in this case, no. Again, because that he is not established.
Well, let's take it. I can't think of a hypothetical to take it out of this case, but I'm trying to. Like I said, I'm just having a hard time understanding. Well, I can understand what the schedule says and so forth, but I just, this duty to assist is bothering me to a certain degree. But, let's let that be what it is.
Now, the appellant made this argument about Jones and the diagnostic codes that were discussed therein.
Yes, sir.
That at different levels in a diagnostic code, or even within one level of a diagnostic code, if medication is not mentioned, then for that particular evaluation level, or for that within whenever the, as here, medication is mentioned in one of the alternatives for a particular percentage evaluation, that those are the only cases, that's only where it's mentioned in a particular level or in one of the alternatives, those are the only bases where you apply, where you even look at medication. So, you know what I mean? Like, so here, the two alternatives, the 100 and the 100 diastolic and the 160 systolic, and for even, I forget what the upper levels are here, if you wanted to go over a over a 10%. I think that here it's 20 and 40, is that it? And medication isn't mentioned in either of those. So the argument would be, why are we, medication and its ameliorative effects are not to be considered when applying those levels of the diagnostic code.
Well, Your Honor, obviously in Jones, the diagnostic code at issue there had no mention of medication.
Right.
The court did speak to a couple examples where medication was contemplated by the diagnostic code, the fibromyalgia diagnostic code, as well as the bronchial asthma. And in those contexts, the language that's used is similar in the need for continuous medication. I believe here, when you read the diagnostic code as a whole, it is clear that we're talking about controlled levels of blood pressure. So when you no longer have that controlled blood pressure, you may fall into these other criteria, criterion in the diagnostic code. But I think we need to go back and look at the controlled levels. If it's controlled below 100, that's kind of the end point there.
But you're adding in the word, let me get the DC,
sure.
the diagnostic code here. But you would admit, okay, so I have it here. It's a 60, 40, 20, 10. We're arguing about the 10, but the 20, the 40, 60 do not mention control. Like the 20 just says diastolic pressure predominantly 110 or more, or systolic predominantly 200 or more.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're arguing that we should read in control, given that the 10%, that we should read in medication, you know, that they're taking medication and that this test would be with medication. The test of whether you met the 20% would be with medication.
It could be, Your Honor. As I stated either in response to Judge Hagel's question or your question earlier, if you don't fall within this third alternative, you fall within one of the other criteria. So if your blood pressure is not controlled below the 120, below the 160, then you presumably would fall or have an evaluation underneath one of the other diagnoses.
Okay, but what do you mean by control? I just want to make sure we're not,
sure,
like, that we're talking about the same thing.
The diagnostic code, as a whole, I believe control can be read as anything that's non-compensable. 100, anything over 100 would be uncontrolled. Anything over 160 systolic would be uncontrolled.
Oh, okay, so you're not talking about controlled with medication when you use the word control.
I am, Your Honor. Presumably, if it's controlled, it would be controlled with medication.
You mean as opposed to diet? Oh, sorry, didn't
I? Yeah, some people can give up caffeine, and that helps their, you know, they give up coffee, and that helps their blood pressure. So, I mean, I don't know that control or some kind of dietary supplement or staying away from something in diet. You can tell I'm a weirdo as far as food goes, because I actually believe that stuff. But so people could make an effort to control their blood pressure, you know, via things other than medication.
Sure, lifestyle changes.
Right.
Things like
uh-huh.
that. Yes, Your Honor.
So when you were talking about control and that these different evaluation requirements.
I was speaking of controlled with medication.
With medication.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
If I may ask, I know it's not raised, but where do the numbers 100 and 160 or for the next percentage come from? Merck manual? Or did the Secretary do their own interpretation or evaluation of these numbers?
Your Honor, the definition of hypertension that's provided in the Note 1 was taken from certain medical sources.
This is Note 1 to the regulation?
Yes, Your Honor, under the diagnostic code. And these sources were discussed in the proposed, in the final rule, which appears in the Federal Register in December 1997. There was a number of treatises and medical texts that were referenced. Cecil's Textbook of Medicine, Heart Disease by Brownwald, Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine by Wilson, and also a 1998 report of the Joint National Committee on Detection, Evaluation, and Treatment of High Blood Pressure. So presumably those levels were based on some type of medical evaluation.
So again, coming back to this fundamental point, at least it's troubling to me, perhaps my colleagues, suppose a fellow just left the service, went in for a VA examination, and had these uncontrolled readings of above 160 for the period of time contemplated by the regulation, or 100, he'd be compensable, wouldn't he? If he had no medication, he just walked in blind luck for these purposes. He walks in, he gets these series of readings, he's compensable. Whereas the person who takes the advice of a military doctor and gets prescribed medicine, which then puts him below these thresholds, doesn't. You think that's fair? More importantly, do you think that's an issue that should have been dealt with by the Board of Veterans' Appeals in its analysis as to why it denied this claim, why it did not manifest an additional duty to assist?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, with regards to the hypothetical, that difference between being diagnosed in service and waiting till after service and being diagnosed in a presumably VA exam or VA treatment, again, those are not the facts in this case. The veteran was diagnosed in service. He did follow the treatment advice of his medical professional. And prior to being prescribed that medication, presumably prophylactically, because he did have a diagnosis of hypertension based on the guidance in note one, his blood pressure history never rose to the level of predominantly over 100, as contemplated in that third alternative for 10% rating on the diagnostic code.
You don't see the possibility that the white coat syndrome would be at play? You go in, your high blood pressure is 180 over 120. 10 minutes later, it's 120 over 60. 2 days later, you have confidence in the doctor, it's even lower. What about that?
Respectfully, Your Honor, that is the very reason why blood pressure readings for diagnosis are taken over a number of days.
2 days in the regulation, right? Or 3 days, something like that.
I believe it's 2 or 3 days, right?
Yeah.
And 2 or 3 readings on each one of those days. And again, the medical texts that I referenced earlier also outline a couple of competing opinions, but clearly that blood pressure levels taken once on a single day may reflect some type of outline factors, caffeine. You ran to the doctor's office that day. You do have white coat syndrome, which I can relate to, Your Honor. So, there are a single blip isn't necessarily indicative of a predominant history in this case. And we do recognize that the record here does show a single reading of 156 over 100 while in service prior to diagnosis and prior to prescription for medication, but that does not rise to the level of predominant history contemplated by this third alternative in the diagnostic code. There are no further questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I just I wanted to start by trying to address the Chief Judge's question to me towards the end of the opening. I hope I remember the question correctly. Was it, how does Jones apply to this diagnostic code in particular?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the way we envision Jones applying to this diagnostic code is you consider the continuous medication required for control only in that third option for the 10% rating. So you're looking for the 10%, just like the language says, is there a history of diastolic pressure, predominantly 100 or more, who requires continuous medication for control? And then for that history portion, 4.7 would also apply, 4.2 would also apply to see if you can get to that level, to that history. For the remainder of the code, the board should be looking at what would the readings be without the ameliorative effects of the medication.
You got to go back walk me through this a little more slowly. I'm sorry.
Okay. So I think what's important to note about the 10% rating is that it's listed in the disjunctive. We have three separate options. We have diastolic pressure predominantly 100 or more, or systolic pressure 160 or more. So those are each an independent basis for obtaining a 10% rating. It's our position that under Jones, the post-medication readings or the readings with the ameliorative effects of medication should not be used to determine a 10% rating under each of those options. For the third option, then the board can look at the fact that the veteran has continuous medication required for control, and then the board needs to look at all of the medical and lay evidence of record regarding what the veteran's blood pressure readings are, what the readings are leading up to the diagnosis and prescription of medications, what that might show about the predominant history, but also has the veteran asserted something like Mr. McCarroll has asserted in this case, which is when he was off medications, his blood pressure was higher, the current evidence showing diastolic readings as high as 97 post-service during the appeal period. I mean, the veteran started off when he was first prescribed lisinopril that he was only given 10 milligrams. Now he's taking 20 milligrams, and his readings are close to 100.
Bring me back to Jones, please. Bring me back to Jones.
Okay.
How it applies here.
Jones excludes the consideration of ameliorative effects
unless
it is specifically discussed in the rating criteria that the board is looking at in that particular case.
Right, and here it is, correct?
Here it's mentioned only for that third option.
Okay, so we can eliminate the third option then.
Eliminating the third option.
So, do you concede we eliminate the third option?
No, okay. No. Because we have argued that he meets the criteria for the third option as well through 4.7, 4.21, and right. The potential for a medical opinion to establish.
So Jones, though, doesn't get you there, correct, on the third option? Jones doesn't have any applicability to the third option. You're saying
correct.
That...
Correct.
Okay, all right.
Jones is only for the parts of the rating criteria that don't mention continuous medication or any okay. type of medication. So for the rest of the diagnostic code, we should be looking at what would his blood pressure readings be if he were not taking medication. And the reasoning in Jones is instructive here, because in Jones the court talks about if the secretary mentions something in one regulation and doesn't mention it in another regulation, that choice must be regarded as deliberate. And we have the example, as I mentioned in the first part of the argument, of the diagnostic code for diabetes, which mentions the requirement of insulin at every level. So where you have the secretary doing that in one diagnostic code, there's no basis in the plain language of this regulation to assume that these readings are post-medications. And what we need in this case is a medical examination to establish what those blood pressure readings would be absent medication required for control. We've provided...
But that only applies to 1 and 2, correct?
The
I'm
need for medical examination?
Pardon me?
The need for a medical examination?
That only applies to 1 and 2, right?
No, Your Honor. The need for a medical opinion...
Yeah, but I thought you said that in Route 3, Jones didn't apply, and therefore the only way you get to a resolution under Route 3 is by 4.7 or 4.21.
And part of that consideration would be the medical question of what would the veteran's blood pressure readings be without medication. So,
medication is part of that. That's what we just talked about. You know, Jones says, if medication is mentioned in the rating schedule, then you can consider it, right? And as I understood you before, you said, well, medication is considered in route number 3, and therefore Jones doesn't apply there. But Jones applies in 1 and 2 because medication is not mentioned in those two.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The only way you get, that's true, then the only way you get under Route 3 is by adding the 4.21 or 4.7 into the mix.
Yes, and you would add 4.21, 4.7 into the mix. But also, what's important to understand here is there's no indication that this predominant history requirement has any purpose other than to establish what the veteran's blood pressure readings would be absent control with medications. And the M21 provisions that we cited in the briefing bolster this because, you know, just to address this notion that somehow having that actual history is significant because of the, you know, the current effects of having that history, if that were true, then it's unclear why the M21 provisions would explicitly tell the adjudicator to ignore hypertensive or minimally hypertensive readings taken long before medications were prescribed. What the M21 says to do is to only look at what are these blood pressure readings leading up to the diagnosis of hypertension prescription with medication. So what that indicates is that what they're really getting at with this predominant history requirement is, would those readings be over 100 without medications? And if he can show through direct medical evidence that would be the case, then it's our argument that he would more nearly approximate that predominant history requirement. And it's undisputed in this case that he also has established a continuous medication requirement. Are there any further questions from the panel?
Well, just an observation that your approach raises problems because, I mean, once you're on medication, then doctor's probably not going to take you off. I don't know. You know, so basically, like, for everyone who's service-connected for hypertension, the doctor has to give an opinion as to what it would be. It's kind of like a, you know, give a medical opinion as to what it would be without requiring some form of, well, you know, it's just less concrete than actual readings, which is how it's done now. You know what I mean?
Well, I think the secretary already does this in getting medical opinions to estimate. I think the perfect example would be in the orthopedic context. Mitchell says you need a medical opinion to estimate what would be the functional loss in the range of motion considering pain and the other DeLuca factors.
Unless, right, and we haven't had any problem with application of that.
Well, assuming the board can go out and obtain a competent medical opinion, and we have a presumption of regularity that the VA's medical experts are competent and can render adequate opinions on medical matters such as that presented in this case, I have all the confidence in the world that the secretary could obtain medical opinions to answer these questions adequately.
And they didn't.
And they didn't in this case.
And that's why it should be remanded.
That's exactly correct. If there are no further questions.
Just a minute. I'm thinking.
Thank you.
Chief is not through yet.
Well, I might be. You got 27 seconds. I don't want to give it up. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, the case is submitted, and the court will recounsel.
All rise.